Hi, I'm Carla Lolly Music, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the number one female-focused food podcast in the universe. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. On today's show, our guests are four women from the spirits world. Not the spirit world, the spirits world. Emma Walker, a master whiskey blender with Johnny Walker in Scotland. Chicago's Katie Renshaw, 2019 Bartender of the Year. Ebony Major, a trailblazing whiskey blender at Bullet Frontier Whiskey in Kentucky. And Lynette Marrero, the co-founder of SpeedRack, the women's bartending competition. I met the four earlier this year when I moderated a panel for the launch of Craftswomen, a cool program put together by the spirits powerhouse Diageo to celebrate the amazing women who make some of the world's most beloved spirits. None of us knew that in just a few weeks, the world would change and challenge our favorite restaurants and bars in a way we never imagined. It's been quite the reminder of how important these places are to all of us, and why folks like bartenders are so key to our sense of community. I'm happy to report that Diageo, the parent company of Johnny Walker and Bullet and others, stepped up to the plate and has donated more than $1 million to the United States Bartenders Guild Relief Fund. Speaking of Jane Walker by Johnny Walker is the sponsor of today's episode. Jane Walker first walked into our lives in 2018, and now she's back, thanks to the Craftswomen Project. This year's limited edition Jane Walker is a blended Scotch whiskey created by Emma Walker. And you'll love this. Cardew, the Johnny Walker distillery in Speyside, Scotland, was purchased by the Walker family back in 1893 from a woman named Elizabeth Cumming. Her mother-in-law, Helen, ran the original distillery. Want to try Johnny Walker for yourself? Head to reservebar.com. You can even order a custom engraved bottle for yourself or for someone special. That's reservebar.com. For today's show, we're bringing you a front row seat to the Craftswomen panel, which was recorded at the Highline Hotel in Manhattan in front of a live audience. Enjoy our conversation.
I just thought it would be a great idea to start with a little icebreaker so you could get to know a little bit more about the women who are on the panel here. So we're just going to go in order. Emma, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the UK, so a combination of Scotland and England. Just kept bouncing backwards and forwards across the border.
And where do you live now?
I live in Edinburgh.
Katie, where did you grow up and where do you live now?
I grew up in Central Florida, a place with no food or beverage scene whatsoever. And I live in Chicago, Illinois now.
Ebony, how about you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and I now live in Louisville, Kentucky.
Bourbon country.
I'm a New Yorkerican, first generation, born here in Brooklyn. So I'm a local girl. I live in the Lower East Side now. So,
yeah. All right, next question. Emma, cocktail of choice?
Cocktail of choice is the one that someone really lovely makes for me and puts in my hand. I'm open to many different cocktail experiences.
That is a very diplomatic answer.
I'll make you one later.
Katie, I think we know the answer for
you. They spoiled it in my intro, but yes, penicillin.
Can you show us that tattoo?
Sure.
Is that possible?
It's this one. So it's like all the components of botanical form. So I have like ginger blossom, lemon blossom, a bee for the honey, and a smoke of scotch.
Amazing.
It's my undercover bartender tattoo. I thought the bar spoon was outplayed.
Ebony, favorite cocktail?
I think I'm similar to Emma. I'll take whatever the bartender gives me. If not, Blackberry Smash is my go-to.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Negroni. I love that it's a... I know, right? Who doesn't love a Negroni? But it's a template that you can play with. I've done it with rum, and it goes well with whiskey. You can do a Boulevardier. So I think it's like the template to go to for awesome drinks.
All right, last question for the speed round. Person you would love to share a whiskey with? Emma?
The lovely people sitting on the panel today. I'm desperately trying not to answer questions.
I'm getting a vibe that all the Diageo people are very diplomatic. So. Yeah. Katie?
Oh, this is so... She took my answer. But I get to have one with you later, so it's a dream come true. I was a musician for 4 years, and I love 90s rock music, so I have to say Gwen Stefani.
No doubt. I have no two ends of the spectrum, Michelle Obama or Rihanna. Those two, yeah.
Well, one would be the woman featured on my earrings, Miss Frida Kahlo, because I bet sitting on a whiskey with her is pretty exciting. And, or Frances McDormand. I want to know what she said after the Oscars when they took away the mic and she's just sitting there, let me tell you about getting equity up in this, you know? So I'd like to sit there and ask her a bit more.
Answers. Okay, all good answers. So three subjects we're going to tackle this evening, three very light subjects: visibility, collaboration, and the future. So most people don't realize the world's most beloved spirits are made by talented pioneering women. Two of them we have on stage with us right now, Emma and Ebony, but you've also got Crown Royal Master Whiskey Blender, Joanna Scandella, Zacapa Master Blender, Lorena Vasquez, Buchanan Master Blender, Maureen Robinson, and Cascade Hollow GM and distiller, Nicole Austin. So I would like to start with having you tell me, Emma, sorry, I'm going to start with you. You have the misfortune of sitting right next to me. So, Emma, I want you to tell me how you view the importance of visibility. What does it mean to see women at the forefront in the spirits world?
I think visibility is important. I mean, if you don't see representation of someone that looks like you, it's difficult to perceive yourself in that position. Mm-hmm. I was in a really lucky position that when I joined Diageo and joined the whiskey team, there were some amazing, strong women in there. It's a really good, equal team. So it was a mix of different people. So I've had probably quite a different experience to other people within the whiskey industry, but it is hugely important to, you need to see it to believe that you can put yourself there. Mm-hmm.
So you and I, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but you were saying when you started out in the industry, you didn't even know this was a job, the job you have today.
Yeah, so I think I'd heard of Master Blenders, but I'd not heard of, I joined the company as a project scientist. And just saw this advertised without any connection to whiskey there. Mm-hmm. And when I turned up for the interview, it was Jim, it was Maureen Robinson that you've mentioned, and Caroline Martin that were interviewing me. And I was like, wow, this is an amazing fit. Like, I can be a chemist who works on whiskey. We should talk about this way more at college, at university, and just get that out there, that this is a great industry to go into. And I think we're getting better at doing that, but it's been a gradual change.
Katie, how about you?
I mean, the women who are visible at the forefront of this industry are the reason I got into the industry. It's similar to what you were saying. I knew that bartending was a career in cocktails. There was a job there, but I didn't know that there was this whole community. And seeing that it was the women at the forefront of the industry that showed me that there was this huge supportive community and that I wanted to be a part of. And it's platforms like the one Lynette and Ivy have built that really caused me to see that there were all these women doing incredible things, and I wanted to be one of them.
Mm-hmm. Ebony, how about you?
For me, when I first got on the team, it was shocking to see like half of our team, our blending team that sits in the U.S. and in Canada, mm-hmm. is 50% women. Our VP of distillation and maturation is a woman. We have team leads, our site director. So having that visibility is great. And for me, just being an African-American woman, I didn't have that same visibility to see other people of the same skin tone. So for me to have Diageo allow me to have this platform and to be inspiring other food scientists or other women of color to be able to go and take other opportunities like this is a real treasure for me.
And how about the same as with Emma? Did you know this was a job?
I did not. Like, listen, when I walked in that lab, I said, why is this whiskey white? I was like, wait, I thought we were blending. And then my manager said, yeah, but Ebony, we do everything from beginning to end. And that was very new for me. I didn't realize at the time we would be having a hand in everything before it went in the barrel. And when it came out, I thought we were just going to take liquid and create a formula. So, yeah, it was very new to me.
So, Lynette, if you represent anything, it's certainly visibility. So tell us what you think about the importance of visibility.
I think no movement can be viable, and I look at those words together, viability and visibility together, mm-hmm. because you can't have something live and grow without that visibility and without really not just even the representation, but then the foundations that you need to add to support it. So it's not just getting women in these spaces, it's proactively creating community and reinforcements to keep them in those positions. And I think that's where you see that's the viability of it. So visibility can start that place, and then the rest of the nurturing and the caring and all the other support systems you put in make that viable to continue.
So I like that you said the word nurturing. You know, my next question is about mentors. So I'm curious, you are now a mentor to so many people in this industry. Who were your mentors?
Julie Reiner was the first person to put a cocktail shaker in my hand, so I can't say that I even would have gone down this path without someone like her. She and her wife Susan and Michelle Connolly were the three women that I met running Flatiron Lounge in 2004, and they were these like glamazon, they're all very tall and I'm not, and they're behind this bar and they were making beautiful drinks with fresh juices and running a business. And, you know, Julie was really good at being her own PR, setting standards and showing that to us every day that, you know, that they were hard at work. And, you know, Susan gets the unsexy job of being the finance person. And they've also, you know, Julie's always very open about how hard the struggle can be to be in this industry as a bar owner. Sometimes partnerships don't work out. And her openness and her leading by example has been, and her strength and courage has been, you know, the biggest mentorship I can have. And now when I could say that you're, when your mentors become your very good friends, that's the goal. And Julie is also a wonderful friend and someone that I continue to learn from and grow with, which I appreciate so much.
Ebony, how about you? Mentors you've either worked with directly or folks you've admired?
Yeah, afar. I've had way too many to count. I sit at the distillery, which we only have maybe 30 to 40 employees there. A lot of us are production. So if ever I needed to talk to anybody, I can call anybody in the previously Norwalk office or New York office to talk to me and help guide me, whether it be career. And I've just really appreciated that. People that are not necessarily there on the day-to-day, but you can go to for guidance for the future, or just to say, hey, give me a sense check on this. Am I thinking too much, or what do I need to do? So I've had a lot of people, male and female. That's one thing I always talk about whenever I'm in these situations is allies. I am big on allies. You know, my biggest supporter, I always talk about, tell my manager, I talk about him everywhere I go because he's my biggest supporter. And just charging men to be allies, that's been my number one support.
Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky through all of the programs I've been a part of to meet a ton of incredible women. Lynette and Ivy and the platform that they've built have been huge mentors to me. And from every season I competed, there's group chats. And anytime any of us need advice, we'll jump in and ask. And we get crowdsourced answers from all these incredible bartenders across the country, all amazing, talented women. And that's been like a big source of mentorship for me. And the other women in the World Class Collective and involved with the World Class program, Julie Reiner being one of them as well, and Laura Newman, who won the year before me as well, have been incredible mentors and sources of knowledge.
Emma?
The one that jumps immediately to mind is a person that you've mentioned, so Maureen Robinson, who's the Buchanan's Master Blender. So I've worked with her since I started in the team 12 years ago, and she just has such an immense knowledge. And she just wants to share so much because she wants everyone else to just be as passionate about Scotch whiskey as she is. I would say the whole team, whether they've worked in the industry for a year up to sort of 43 years, we all act as mentors and guides and help each other out in many different ways. But it's also people like Jim Beveridge and other people in technical who have pushed me in a way, as you say, as allies, but also pushed me to put myself into uncomfortable situations. So I got to spend time as managing the whiskey team. I was really unsure about this to sort of apply for the job. And it was Jim that was like, you have to do this. You've got to show that you can do this. Just go and do it. My colleagues that pushed me to go and work in production. So having someone that is just willing you to get out of your comfort zone to learn more and then to bring that back to the team, I think is amazing. And for them to have the confidence in you when you don't always have that confidence, so they can see something new that you might not see at that time, is a huge push and a huge boost.
So speaking from your experience as founders, blenders, employees, how can companies and brands make a deep, genuine impact regarding visibility? I would love to hear from each of you any advice or any examples you can point to.
I think don't make it so hard. It's not that hard to be inclusive. You don't necessarily need a metrics. You don't have to say we want this percentage. Go out there and do it. The talent is there. I think this craftswoman program is a good example of it, because prior you didn't see the many women behind these brands, the women that are really driving the industry and bartending. So I think we're setting a trend where actually, as long as you stay committed to it, I think we're doing a really good job.
I agree, and I think I liked what Lynette said earlier about like viability. I think it's not only about putting women in positions of power and leadership positions, but also from the ground level, from like starter positions like bar backs, hiring women and nurturing them up to the level of bar manager, of bar owner, and starting from the bottom as well, and yeah. providing that mentorship and the positive role models and leadership from powerful women.
I think as well is how we talk. So when roles come up, it's how we talk about them, how we advertise them. So it might be that it's been advertised in a certain way in the past, and that's got a certain group of people applying for those jobs, but really thinking and challenging ourselves about how we do that. So we've recently had female apprentices join the companies, Coopers, Coppersmiths, got a lot of engineering apprenticeships. So it's just thinking about how that showcases who you're talking to in schools, in universities, and really challenging ourselves on that to make sure that we are talking to a wider group of people so we're getting the best people joining.
Emma and I were having an interesting conversation before this, and we were saying how, you know, it is so interesting, a program like Craftswomen, because the women are out there. You know, there are women working for these brands, there are women who own bars, who are super talented bartenders, but for so long, they weren't the ones in the spotlight. So it's been really remarkable to see the changes in the industry and to see, you know, everything kind of culminate in a program like Craftswomen, where women are, the women who are out there and who've been doing the hard work for years, you know, are finally getting the attention. Lynette, you're the only one who didn't answer.
I was like just really applauding, but I thought it was interesting earlier when I learned a little bit about Ebony coming from other places in food science. So, you know, it's always the best way to recruit, and we're at a crucial point, especially in hospitality, about refilling those coffers and raising up a next generation of people who are going to be working in our bars and restaurants and becoming the next generation. And if we're closed-minded to opening that up to groups who are traditionally excluded, we're not going to move forward, and we're going to have this empty space. So we need to encourage more women, more LGBTQ, more Black people to bartend, do all these things. And you see these movements happening. You see people getting into craft. So how do you, you know, it all happened at the same time too. It's like getting people to be like, hey, clubs are great. Come to this place where there's a career. We can bring you in. And so that recruitment, you have to get outside of your normal space. And that's the hardest thing. It's, you know, everyone just expects they're going to come find us. It's like, no, you have to communicate, and you have to be dedicated to going out into the community and finding the people you want to represent in your space, which represents your community that's going to be coming to your bar. So you have to do work at it as well. And that's the part that becomes more sustainable about it. So not just like, hey, yay, it's one month out of the year that we're paying attention to, you know, groups that you don't see as often. It's every day thinking of, okay, how are we diversifying? How are we bringing more people in? How are we putting support systems in? What is the prolonged education to make this a longer term project, not just a initial start, you know, because all the, it doesn't exist without that.
Right. I love that you use the word recruit. I think too often people don't really think of recruiting, and they're looking at who's coming to them mm-hmm. instead of going out and recruiting talent, you know, like you would for a sports team or something like that. All right, so we're going to talk about the new Jane Walker by Johnny Walker and the Bullet Bourbon Blenders Select Number 1. These are the first limited edition releases under the Craftswomen campaign. So I'd like to know what you can tell us about these projects. So Emma, again, we're going to start with you. Mm-hmm. So the Jane Walker project, tell us about it.
So when I got given the concept around Jane Walker, it was to create a whiskey that celebrated pioneering women. So as I talked about earlier, we took that inspiration of the pioneering women who'd worked with Johnny Walker and whiskey. So really thinking about the Cummings, Elizabeth Cumming, but also Helen, but also the great women that I worked with that, as we've been talking about, I've been working in whiskey for decades and really thinking about what they brought and how they taught me about whiskey. So how we talk about flavor. And that was a key point as well, was it's always about flavor. Whenever we're creating a new scotch, it is about flavor. So there'll be an idea comes in and we're immediately going to, well, what sort of whiskeys do we want to use in there? How are we going to bring that together? And having that inspiration from coming from Johnny Walker, using Black Label and exploring that was an amazing place to start from.
How long did it take before you were happy with the final results.
You're never happy with the final results. You always want to just keep on tweaking it a little bit more, and this is where deadlines and the development process really helps, because you get to a stage where you want to keep going, and the lovely marketing colleagues that you work with are like, no, that's it. We need it now. And it's got to go to production, so it's good having that time frame to work to.
So,
would just keep going.
Laughing over there. I have this image of Emma with her project and then pulling the bottles away from you. Yes, exactly. Ebony, you were laughing too.
Yeah, because I was telling the group earlier. So mine started a little bit different than Emma's. Our typical process is you get the innovation pipeline and the ideas from the innovation group, and for months I had been. We appraise thousands of barrels every year, and I have seen so many good liquids go by, and they get used at 3%, maybe 5%, just because they're great, but they don't help the consistency of Bullet year after year. So I talked it over with my boss, who's been here 20 years, so he likes to stick to our traditions, and I said, just listen to me, hear me out about this idea. And I said, we need a small batch. We need something special. We just need people to understand what it is that we do and how committed we are to our job. So I called up Sophie and Ed and said, hey, I have this idea. What do you think about it? And luckily they went for it. But similar to Emma, halfway through, I was telling the group earlier, I was like, why did I even think of this? Like, I was halfway through the blend, like, why did I sign up for this? Because it was so different than what I'm used to. Every year I blend to match. I blend to make sure it's consistent compared to the year before. And this year I was like, I had five blends. Fruity forward. I had different categories, and the possibilities were endless. And it took me months to land on two blends that I was really happy with and wanted to present to the team. And we landed with Blenders 001. So I'm really excited for it. It's a 50% ABV. I want it to go a little bit higher than traditional Bullet and give you flavors that really speak true to who I am as a person, as well as a blender. And I hope everybody loves it.
But now you have a pipeline of next year's.
I know. Now it's funny because last week we were looking at a plan, and my boss was like, okay, Ebony, what are you doing for that? I said, no, next year's yours. No, not Ebony. Next year is yours.
Who do blenders talk to when they're stumped?
I don't know. You can't. Who do you talk to? Yourself?
No,
I was going to say,
you talk to yourself.
Yeah,
you sit
back. You literally, I'm screaming curse words. I'm saying whatever. Like, oh, I can't do. You are talking to yourself. Sometimes you have to just walk away from the computer. Ignore the counts, because blending is a lot of math. A lot of math. You're assuming loss. But blending is also teamwork. I can sit and create a blend by myself all day, but until I get the feedback of my team, I'm stuck. And so you have to rely on your team, because the way I say something, I may be very biased. So I lean on them to taste and give me their notes and tell me which direction to go to next.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And part of it as well is, as you create something, you've got ideas in your head and you work through iterations. And then when you showcase this to the rest of the team and they try it, but you have to explain why you created it in that way and what you were thinking. And that starts you thinking it through, and you're like, right, just ignore what I said. That was, it might be before they even get their nose over it. You're like, no, I've not thought about that right, because you've just almost been working a little bit by yourself. And that's when you get the real power of the team, is when you start to discuss it, get the feedback.
And then know what direction to go to.
Exactly.
Yeah. You really depend on your team to guide you after that.
Emma, are you talking to yourself when you're doing these projects?
All the time.
I was practicing when I was doing the blending.
It's hard.
That is hard.
Yeah.
That's why we work behind glass windows, so people can see us working, but they can't hear.
They tap on the window. Not right now. When you're in blending, I normally go in on my weekends to blend, because I want to be distraction free, because you can easily get in your head and you put the wrong milliliter in there and you got to start all over, and there's no liquid to waste.
And if someone disturbs you as well, if something urgent comes in to do with production and that, then you're sort of out of the zone. It's really difficult to get back to that.
It is.
So you have to sort of block time away from other things that are going on.
Wow. Do you work in silence, or do you have music playing?
I always play music, because we are a very talkative group. So I play music always, just to kind of zone in, or I wait till people go to lunch and that's when I go and do my tabletop blends, or like I said, I go in on weekend time and just figure it out. But it's peaceful.
What was your bullet soundtrack?
I have a mixture. I have
a blend.
Oh my goodness. Most times it's African dance house music, just because I don't need any words. I don't need anything to really confuse me. I just need some sounds just going. So I just prefer the African house music, but it can be anything. Yuna, her, it's just soft music always is what I go to.
Emma,
what about
silence. You? Do you listen to music?
My preference is for music, but it can depend which lab you're working in, because we've just moved to new labs. So at the minute, we're meant to be working with no music on, but we are working with our senior manager to see if we can start to change that over time.
They're always earbuds, right?
Yeah, oh, exactly.
So Ebony teed up this next question nicely because it's about collaboration. So whether we're talking about a distillery, a bar, or a bartending competition, none of it happens without collaboration. So I thought that was a great opportunity for us to talk about Speed Rack, because I know everyone in this room is a Speed Rack fan, and it obviously takes not even dozens, I'm guessing hundreds of people to pull off Speed Rack around the country. So Lynette, why don't you just tell us a little bit about Speed Rack and how it came to be and just how you pull this off every year?
Sure. So Speed Rack is in its 9th year. Wow. Which is insane. When we look at the clock, I even are like, what happened to the last 9 years? But we started it here in New York. As Sophie said earlier, I had started the New York chapter of Ladies United for the Preservation of Endangered Cocktails. And I started that group when I was working as a brand ambassador for Zacapa Rum. And, you know, I was really fortunate to get into the industry here in New York at the time where pretty much, if you were willing to make less money to work harder, you can have a job in a craft cocktail bar, because everyone else is making a lot of money on vodka sodas, and we're shaking with hard ice and doing all this work, but it was about trading in those for a skill set. And that meant that there, you know, it was very gender blind. It was just a group of people together committed to advancing this craft and this culture, and that was amazing. And what I didn't realize until I had to branch out of my zone was that a lot of those people that I was working with, my peers, were men. And when I had to branch out and go to these other bars that were on my account list, because you go to all these bars, you're like, oh, they're pouring my rum, I'm going to go there. I started meeting these incredible women who I didn't know, and they were fantastic bartenders. I'm like, why don't I know who they are? This is a problem. So I started Lupec, Megan Dorman's over here, she was one of the people who joined on, and we started doing events in New York, taking over bars where women would hop behind bars where usually predominantly men worked, and we would do charity events to raise money for women's shelters, Dress for Success, all the different things. We thought, you know, we had seen the Boston chapter had started doing that kind of work, and we aligned with that. And through all of that, I met Ivy Mix, who's my partner in Speed Rack, and she had just moved to New York, and she had bartending experience, and she was working as a cocktail server at Maya Well, and she was having a hard time getting behind the bar. And we met, and I was like, well, come do these events that I do. You know, I put women behind the bar. You're going to do it for charity, but it's great exposure, and we're going to do good things, and we're going to get brands to give us bottles, and we're going to do it. We're going to make all this stuff, and we're going to raise money. And so we did that, and at one of the events where I basically had about 30 women from all over the country working at Manhattan Cocktail Classic, we were literally in the kitchen batching all the drinks, delivering all the cocktails to the seminars that were happening. And Ivy and another friend of ours was on break outside, and this group came up and like, we're filming this thing and we have no women. Can you guys come film this? And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. She's like, no one knew who I was. They just want a woman. And meanwhile, there were literally 30 women just in making it all happened. And so, you know, she thought a little bit more about it, and she ran into me in a dive bar in Brooklyn during the Super Bowl that year in 2011. I was like, hey, Lynette, like, I don't know, we've got to do something. Let's do something like, you know, like your Lupec things. Let's do some sort of competition. We'll call it Speed Rack because it's kind of funny. It's like everything that's in your well, but it has a double entendre. And we'll raise money for charity, and let's do breast cancer. And my mother-in-law is a survivor. I'm like, well, that's great. Let's align it. And we asked all of our friends who were brand ambassadors, like, hey, you're going to sponsor this awesome event, and it's going to be amazing, and we're going to terrify all these women in New York and ask them to hop on stage and do this crazy competition that we just thought up, which was making classic cocktails. But what we wanted to show was that these women were amazing, that they could be behind their bar on Friday night cranking out classic cocktails, and four of the most important people walk in the bar, which is not uncommon in New York. You could have Dale DeGroff walk in with Julie and Audrey and Dave Wondrich, and they'll be like, hey, we'd like these drinks. And you're like, oh my goodness, I have a whole room to make drinks and I have to make your drinks. So we just blindly ran into doing this and jumped on the first event was electric. The room was incredible, and we could just see that people wanted to see how incredible. It's kind of like, we're like, it's like roller derby. You watch those women, you're like, man, they're fast, they're hard, but they're still like such women, and they're just doing it, and it's so amazing to watch. And that caught on, so we, you know, jumped into an 11-city tour around the U.S., which was insane. And then we just kept doing it because people in the community still wanted it, and more women just kept signing up. And we're like, well, we'll stop when the women stop signing up to be tortured like this, because we're like, what is it about this? Why do they want to stay on the stage? And year after year, more and more countries ask us to do it. People say, come to our country, do this event, do it for our community, and we'll have men reaching out to ask us to do it for the women in their community. We'll have women reaching out saying, we want to run this. So we've expanded to over 6 global countries. We did our first Spanish language event last year in Mexico. We're going to do Argentina again this year. And, you know, it's just grown to this incredible place where the community has grown. And that's what's amazing, is that this network has become, you know, I wouldn't have met Katie. I wouldn't have had such deep relationships with so many people. And it's incredible to see that can happen. And we all come together to also raise money for charity, which is incredible. We just passed $1 million this summer for breast cancer research. So, you know, and that bartenders will use their skill sets to raise money. I don't know any bartender who says no to a charity event. It's pretty incredible. So that's what I love, that this community does that. But, you know, people come to our events to recruit. We've seen lots of the women in our organization become brand ambassadors, have moved, you know, running bar programs. And so we gave them a platform. We said, stand on it, take it, and take the opportunities that will come your way. And we've been very fortunate that the industry has given it to them and has recognized that they're hardworking and will be incredible assets to any company that wants to bring them in and have them work for them. So,
I mean, Lynette, that's remarkable. I mean, just, we have to give her another round of applause. I am amazed at what you've built and how much you've raised, and you still have a job on top of that.
Yeah.
That's what everyone needs to know. Yeah.
A few, yeah. But that's the part of it. What it's great is that network kind of, you know, Ivy and I always talk about it, and I say it's a vocation. You know, that part of who I am has informed everything that I'm doing now. You know, how I choose to hire in my venues, how I think about the training programs that I'm doing for my entire staff comes from that. What kind of, you know, support are we going to give them? That all comes through this Speed Rock network, the things I've learned about that and about myself and about how to learn how to mentor effectively, what that really means. You know, I think a lot of people think, you know, mentorship is just showing them how you do it and that's it, but it's really encouraging them to find their voice within your space and the opportunity you're giving them.
Katie, you're nodding to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny, everything she's saying about finding your voice is kind of like, if I had never done Speed Rack, I don't think I would have ever found my voice to do world class. And Speed Rack showed me the incredible community of bartenders that were out there. And I was like, well, if I've done this, maybe I can win world class. And I'd seen all these men win world class year after year after year. And I was 3 years into the industry when I first applied to World Class, and a woman hadn't won yet, and I'm in front of my computer about to hit send, and I was like, I'm not ready. And one of my mentors is like, you're absolutely ready, just hit send, submitted my application. I made it to nationals that year when Laura Newman, the first woman, won World Class, and watching her progress to globals, you know, I feel like I had this idea in my head of what a bartender who won world class looked like and what that was. And then watching Laura's performance in globals, and she was so genuine, and it's not about being what you think a world class bartender is, it's about being the best bartender you can be. And me taking that into the next year, I feel like I really found my voice and seeing these women's example before me and taking that into my years, the reason that I won.
I was very excited when I found out that the bartender of the year 2019 was going to be on our panel. So continuing on the theme of collaboration, you know, you mentioned some mentors who helped you just have the strength to even apply to be in the program. But talk about, you know, it obviously takes a village to get you to the point where you're competing and winning, you know, such prominent awards. So talk a little bit about the people behind you who helped you get here.
Yeah, I mean, I think... you know, when you're competing on the national level, you get a lot of support from your local community, especially when you're representing, like, I was representing Chicago, and that was big, so I got a lot of support from local Chicago bartenders, and I had tons of resources. Once you win at the national level, going to globals, you get this whole team around you. I mean, like, Charles Jolie and I would meet up in R&D cocktails, and then I would sit in front of Julie Reiner and Chris Cardone and go through my rounds, and... like, suddenly you have this whole, the whole country behind you. And it's amazing. The world-class firm kind of creates that family of people that you can turn to when you're working on these things, and they're there to lift you up and help you.
Who do you call when you're competing and you're freaking out or not freaking out?
One of my best friends in the world-class collective is Chris Cardone, if anyone knows him. But he is very much... a bartender. He's always says, like, bartender before startender. He's, like, all about the craft. And so he's the one I talk to when I need, like, just to kind of bring me down to earth and give me some real practical advice. He's definitely the one that I call.
Sometimes you need that.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Sometimes you need that, what I call a sense check.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you can overthink. You can be in your own reality, and it's good just to call someone. Sometimes they tell you you have it spot on, but sometimes they're like, yeah, just chill out. Just take a breath and then figure it out. You really need that sometimes.
Lynette, who's that person for you?
So it's a group called the Coven. it's this group of women who I met predominantly through Tales of the Cocktail. We were on the grants committee together, but I had known all these people, Alba Huerta, Kelly Thorne from Atlanta, Megan Dorman sitting here, Nandini Khan from Chicago, Angie Featherston from D.C., all who are incredible businesswomen who care about community. And we kind of, this past year, just all started a WhatsApp group that has become like this amazing place for me to safely like talk about insecurities, fears, celebrate successes, and have these things. We're all in like a, we just did a squat challenge for 30 days, but like, you know, it's women who are in my group. We did. We're feeling good. But it's this really safe space. It's funny because they're spread all around the country. But it's women in this industry who I admire and we just decided, we're like, why should this only happen one time a year when we're hanging out at a festival together, and we till the next time, and we decide to create our the next time. And that's been a really great professional resource and personal resource for me this year that has really like just kind of changed. Like, it's just a whole different level, you know, of how supported I feel in this industry by the people in the community who really will, everyone really does feel like there's so many people can be committed to your success. And when you find the right dynamic of people that you can feel completely, you can let all those guards down in front of and show them like the vulnerable side, that's really empowering, because it's hard to sit there and always, you know, be like, everything's great, everything's cool. And, you know, it's a lot of times it all is. But when you have those insecurities, I'm not someone who feels comfortable or enjoys putting that out on it. I'm not a social media person. I'm not going to put it up, be like, hey, everyone, today feels like this. I would more likely just not say anything. So having a space where I feel comfortable to share, to work through those things, and then to feel supported is pretty incredible.
For the last part of the talk, we're going to speak a little bit about the future, and I'm going to have you all give some hopes and predictions for the future. So it's clear women in the industry have made so much progress, like we've talked about, and it's what Craftswomen really is representing and celebrating. But I'd love to know what you would like to see next in this area. Again, are there some concrete things you would like to see, steps you think that could be taken? Lynette, let's start with you.
Well, right now in Turkey, the Para Bay Forum is happening right now, started by Maria Cannaval. And that organization is really trying to, they push against all these things that they see. When 50 Best has so few women run restaurants and they are not quiet about it, they are loud. And what needs to happen now is seeing the equity distribution needs to go into ownership. We need to see that percentage change and see who's actually running. Because it's great, you can have diversity and people running your place and all those things, but if they're not, if they do not have an equity stake, we are not going to see the growth that we need to happen. So I want to see more ownership from women in the industry, and I think that'll make it a better place.
Similar to that, equity over equality. I think everyone in this room pretty much knows the difference. I'm looking to see more equity for women throughout the industry and the work that we do. But not only that, from a whiskey point of view, we have consumers that are more transparent now. They're looking for transparency. They want to know what goes in their whiskey, how it was made, where are the ingredients going after it was made. And so that's what we're doing at Bullet. We're making sure that we're sticking key to that transparency, sustainability, innovation, all three of those things to make sure that we're giving the consumers exactly what they want. And that's what I'm looking forward to, especially being the youngest out of the blending group here. I want to keep pushing those boundaries and giving consumers what they are looking for, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think kind of what you were saying about, I totally agree that the consumers are more and more and more knowledgeable, and it causes us to have to really up our game. And I think particularly in the whiskey field, most consumers really know a lot about the different categories of whiskey, and to me that tells me it's time to start breaking the mold a little bit more and breaking those lines of category that we see so kind of firmly now, like things like American single malts kind of like taking off, and like things like that to me are an indicator that we have a like consumer base really knowledgeable, and so we can only go from there and really innovate.
I'm going to build on what you guys are saying. So it's like you're saying, it's that innovation, but it's that knowledge base. But I think that we need to do that inside the companies as well. So where we've got this cross collaboration, we tend to think about it within groups alone. So like Scotch, American, just continue to build that. So we're actually innovating. We're working across the team. So working more with you guys over in America and different areas as well. So it's sharing, really, truly sharing knowledge and understanding. But again, also building on what you were saying about sustainability and transparency is, we said before, we're making whiskey, we're making drinks. So we want to continue making whiskey in the best way, but we have to be responsible, doing it in a responsible way. We're laying down stocks for generations, for decades to come. We have to make sure we're doing it responsibly, that we're using the raw materials in the right way, that we're, every process we're using, we're making sure it's energy efficient, that it's been thought of in the right way. We're treating the raw materials, the liquids, the casks in the best way, so we're not wasting any of that resource, and we're thinking about the future. The future, we may end up making whiskey in quite a different way. We don't know what on that journey, but we've got to be aware of that and start thinking that through.
So the whole sustainability thing, if you could talk about that a little bit more, about what you're doing specifically at Bullet.
So at Bullet, sustainability is one of our top priorities. All of our water is coming from Guest Creek. It's the lake that you can cross the road, and we pull the water into a retention pond. We grow our own corn. We have a farm behind the distillery. We lease the land across from it. All of our corn is within a short, I won't give you exact numbers, but I believe it's less than 20 miles radius of where we are in Shelbyville. So we're very committed to being local to the Shelby County community in Kentucky. Zero waste to landfill. Everything that we're making, we don't send anything to the landfill. All of our waste from the distillery, which is called distiller's grain, we send it to the farmers for cow feed. So we're always looking for, you know, unique ways. And right now, one of my personal at-home research projects is, what more can we do with the wood?
So we got a few questions from the audience. I think we'll probably get to two of them. So Emma, something that surprised you about getting into this industry?
I think it probably was. So we talking about earlier on today is the perception of the Scotch industry from the outside is that you see in the media, you see in other places, is that it's a lot of guys working in there. And when you actually join the industry, you realise that there are so many great women. There is a lot of equality there, but it's not always visible outside. So that was actually a big surprise, that it was so balanced and that there was these great opportunities. And I say there's so many jobs and roles within the industry that you just don't know exist until you actually have a chance to get in there and see it. So part of it is that just having these communities, having this way of talking about the different opportunities that are there and making it as visible as possible.
Katie?
I think the thing that probably surprised me most, I mean, I was saying that I got into the industry because I saw the incredible sense of community that there was, but I think I didn't realize how wide-reaching it was. Like, I attended my first Tales of the Cocktail, and I was like, oh my God, this is a whole world, and the amount of resources and knowledge there is out there, if you put your mind to it, you can really advance. I mean, I've been in the industry for 4 years, and I've been able to take all of this knowledge that's available and out there now that we've kind of gotten past the cocktail revolution and we're onward and upward, the train is rolling. And there's so much information out there to build on, and I was surprised at just how much I've been able to run with that, I guess.
Ebony? I think the most shocking for me was just the amount of opportunities within creating liquids, because creating whiskey is such a traditional industry, but those rules were created so long ago. We can change that. We can navigate. We can do different things. But also, I mean, we can. It's ours to create. But also the amount of information and knowledge that was there, you know, that's one of the things we're doing at Bullet. We're always giving for scholarships. You see where schools are now focusing on whiskey education as an opportunity in college, things that none of us up here had, and I only graduated a few years ago. We didn't have those opportunities. You know, we have our greenhouse behind the visitor center is run by University of Kentucky. Those were things I wish I would have had. So it was really shocking to see the amount of opportunities. I'm just happy to see that the younger generation has these mm-hmm. available to them in a way that we didn't growing up.
I really want to come hang out with you and see the. I want to see this visitor center.
I can show you a good time. I swear. I'm telling you. You go outside if you ever see. Like, you can walk out and there's deer everywhere. And we have a running joke. We have the competition on site because we have wild turkeys running around. It's an amazing facility. I promise you, you can't have a bad day here.
You've painted quite the picture for us. All right, Lynette, I'm going to pull a fast one on you. You're going to answer the last question, and it's an easy one, or maybe not. Your favorite food to pair with whiskey?
Oh, probably a really good cheese and charcuterie plate. Oh. You know, because then they'll sneak in things like Marcona almonds, too. So, like, I get a whole, like, variety of things and some, like, apricots. So that little charcuterie we had downstairs was perfect with the whiskey. Yes. So I think it's kind of a cheat, but, yeah.
We actually have, like, a monthly thing between my boss and I where we do pairings because we just geeky like that. And lately we've been trying whiskey and green teas.
Ooh.
Very different because I know there's one brand of a green tea that has a something owl where you can mix green teas, or not green teas, just teas with your cocktails. But we wanted to look at the bitterness of a tea and then everything of a whiskey. So we just do a lot of things for fun, but we love a good charcuterie and then we throw in some teas and some dark chocolates here and there.
All right, what are you pairing in Scotland with your whiskey?
You've got the traditional roots of, like, a lot of really good cheeses and the different types of cheese, depending on which whiskey, but always really good fish, so smoked fish or fresh fish. Yeah, you can just match it with so many different flavours. Especially if someone else is going to feed me it, I'm happy.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Emma, Ebony, Katie, and Lynette. I loved getting to know each of you. And thank you to Jane Walker by Johnny Walker for supporting our podcast. Be sure to follow Cherry Bomb's Instagram this week for a special series of conversations from Johnny Walker as part of the brand's Kitchen Sink Drinks campaign. You can go to our Instagram account and to Johnny Walker US to learn more. And don't forget, please drink responsibly. Today's show was edited with help from Kat Gorelli. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Cha La La. Hang in there, everybody. And thank you for listening. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, I'm Megan Dorman. I'm the bar director for Dear Irving and Rain's Law Room in New York City. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Kelly Thorne, beverage director for the Hugh Atchison Restaurant Group in Atlanta, Georgia. Kelly's an amazing friend, mom, and a fabulous person to share a martini with. Her and her crew have been feeding the needy in Atlanta during the COVID-19 crisis, and that's the bomb.